Ahoy, friends. You are listening to the Friday follow-up for episode 22, The Basic Story, in which we had our fantastic listeners, Caroline and Rachel, who put together a phenomenal edit of comparing Jay's story with Jen's story. We have a lot of feedback from listeners, some questions. We are sans Zach today, so we miss him very much, but we are excited to get into this conversation.
Yeah, Zach's out on assignment. I want to thank everybody for joining us. Yep, Zach's out on assignment, so it's just me and JV today for your listening pleasure. A couple things I want to give you guys, some reminders up front, some housekeeping stuff. One, remember next week there are no episodes. It is our spring break, and I'm taking my daughter on her last high school spring break. We're going on vacation for the week, so there will be an episode on Sunday, but there'll be no follow-up or main episode next week. So our next episode after Sunday will be a week from the next Friday when we'll do the follow-up for that episode. So we're trying to be, Janet's traveling for some personal stuff. I'm getting ready to travel. Zach's busy. So we're trying to keep our heads in the game today to get through this episode. So that's going on. As far as Sunday goes, you all can thank listener Claire Knight, who on Facebook asked me if I would reach out to Mr. Ken Davies, who hosts the Mysterious Case of Fred the Head, a really cool podcast from the UK about a super interesting case. I started listening just to see what it was about. I'm fascinated. I reached out to Ken, and he's going to be doing an interview with me for this week's episode. So that's what you guys are going to have on Sunday, is that episode. For those of you that are listening to this live or watching us live on YouTube, if you're a patron, at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time tomorrow, I'm going to stream that, do a live stream for the patrons, so you guys can join in and add in any questions that you want for that. You get a little taste of what's coming a little bit ahead of time from everybody else. What else do we have? Oh, still, everything has been very, very, very busy and very productive with the new case. I was just telling Janet in our pre-show that I spent quite a bit of time today at the courthouse chasing down some records. I have spent a lot of time sending messages to the police department, who doesn't seem to want to respond. And I meant to ask this last week, but if any of you listening happen to be attorneys in Michigan that would like to help out with some of what I'm doing to get some of these records, I would very much like to talk to you. And some of it just being there is apparently some very severe violations of records retention laws. And I want to make sure, amongst other things, that the department, if that is the case, that they're held accountable to that, get that up to the attorney general or whatever has to happen. So if you happen to be a Michigan licensed attorney and you would like to help out with something like that, please reach out to me, shoot me an email or DM me somewhere on social media, and we can do that. I do want to let you guys know too, that there are, but we're making progress. I was able to get something done in the case this week that apparently people have been trying to do for 20 years. So everybody involved behind the scenes, including Robbie and the people that sent it to her, are very excited about where we're going with this case right now. So there is a lot going on. I was just told by listener Kelly in the chat to check my email. So it sounds like maybe we already got an email about an attorney right now.
Oh, wow. That's amazing a turnaround, but I can't say I'm surprised. Given our
Kelly, I know, works with attorneys, so maybe that's what that is about. So just why I know you guys are all waiting, and the only reason I'm telling you is to let you know that, like, nobody's sitting back on their haunches right now. We are full fledged forward, moving forward with this case. We're just trying to get. I'm fighting to get the final bit of records, and there's also some issues. You know, there are things, because I thought about, like, we'll just go with what we got and we'll get them along the way. But there are just things with this case in particular that I don't want to be aired until I don't want to give anybody a heads up about anything. I'll just say that.
Got it.
So I'm making sure that we have our T's crossed and our I's dotted before we get any further with that. So I think that's the end of the housekeeping. Again, you have that interview with Ken Davies. Should be really interesting on Sunday. If you're a patron and you're watching this live tomorrow, Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern, I'll be doing a patron-only live stream of that interview. We'll be off for the next week, so the following two episodes, there'll be no episode, and we're still jamming for the new case, and I need a lawyer. to help me track down these records. So hopefully we'll get some of that done. And with that being said, I want to give another big thank you to Caroline and Rachel. I just want to let you guys know that when I wanted to put this together, my thought was literally just, I'll just grab the spots where Jay says this happened and Jen says, describing the same moments in time, which would have been a hell of a task to try to get through to begin with. But Caroline, from my understanding, Caroline did a lot of the legwork, breaking down the timelines, finding the timestamps and the spots in the transcript where they could break everything down. She did a lot of organizational work. Rachel did all of the audio engineering work on it and all the editing. I was shocked when they sent me the file when it was done. I was like, holy crap, that was so much work. And I also want to point out too, I want to reiterate, after I re-listened to it at the gym on Sunday, because I wanted to be ready for doing this episode, what I said at the beginning, I just kind of want to reiterate that again, that the process in doing this is all about objectivity, which my intention from the beginning of the reply brief, the way it started was, I had a knee-jerk reaction to the things that they were saying. They cut against what I believe to be true. Rather than just say, nope, you're wrong. Nope, you're biased, or the things that people like to say. People love to attack the person instead of attacking the idea or the thought. I want to go through and actually fact-check all this stuff and find out for myself. And so in that one statement they made, where they kind of wrapped everything up and said that, Jay's interview second interview doesn't matter because Jay and Jen told the same story in his first interview, and that's the basic story and that's the big problem. My knee-jerk reaction was to say, no, that's bullshit, but I wanted to go through and see for myself. Let me look at this objectively and see what exactly do they both say. My reaction to this, when I finally listened back, I listened to it when I was editing, and then I listened through it all in sequence on Sunday, was that it was such a cluster. I genuinely couldn't even track the stories they were trying to tell.
Mm-hmm.
In that they were inconsistent with each other. They were inconsistent with their own stories. They kept changing things. It is such a mess. And so now I'm very, very comfortable saying that there is no basic story, in my opinion. Janet, what did you think of the episode?
No, I totally agree with everything you said. And I think it has been so interesting because, again, we've heard little bits and pieces of the interviews way back in the day. We've heard the interviews discussed. We've heard the interviews referenced without ever having actually heard all of the moments that have been referenced by other podcasts. And to have the opportunity through this journey to hear everything for ourselves and then find these different filters through which we can kind of glean and understand specific pieces of information and making those comparisons. And the work that Caroline and Rachel did is something that, again, we've all sort of wished we could do or talked about because there were so many confusing elements that I think we all thought, like, well, hopefully at least we will have our heads wrapped around it in a better way. And I think the lesson of finding out, like, it's still really hard to wrap your head around it, even when all of this work has gone into it, is very telling. For me, it really struck me more this time, for whatever reason, having those back-to-back moments and having some of the fat trimmed, if you will, as we are trying to isolate those objective, quote-unquote, facts. It just struck me more than ever before how much it feels like Jen is just taking shots in the dark so often. I mean, to me, that just really stood out. It just felt like there were so many statements, and again, this is not new information, but it just stood out to me more than ever that she's like, maybe I said blah, blah. I probably said, you know what? I actually don't know. Like, there was just a lot of you're in so deep in this something that you don't have a lot of information about. And you're just like, in my opinion, you're struggling so hard to hold on to the pieces that you were supposed to say. And when you get kind of dragged into something that you have no prep on, it just falls apart incredibly fast. And she sort of ends up having to abandon stuff. Poor Jen.
Yeah. And what they did was they really cut the fat out and let you focus in on the actual, like, important elements of what she was saying. And that's, and in doing that, like, I even noticed when we played the episode, her interview in full, there were people that are like, she's reading, she's clearly reading something. And there were certainly times where I felt that way. But man, when you hear all the extra stuff cut out and just hear those key elements, like there was one moment in particular that stuck out to me was when she starts reading, she goes, at this time I was, and it was like, okay, that she's obviously, no one talks like that.
Yeah.
She's reading. And again, as I said before, it's probably stuff they wrote down or she even wrote down during her pre-interviews and stuff. But it was very clear that those elements where she was trying to get stuff straight were being read. Like nobody says at this time when they were just referencing sometime in the past.
Right.
But it was an amazing, incredible amount of work. I know that I don't remember if I mentioned once we started or it was in the pre-show, but Janet's got a hard out today. And I know that I think we should be able to get this pretty quick because I can't imagine this episode generated a lot of questions. Most of what I was seeing were a lot of comments. So let's kind of buzz through these and we'll leave. You've got to travel tomorrow. I've got to travel in a couple of days. So see what we can knock out here.
Yeah. Sure thing. I think you're right. There are people who are noticing, I think kind of having the same experience that you and I just talked about having, which is that even more things are coming to light for people, that they're noticing more things. And I think, you know, what you might hear from some of these folks with their comments is, you know, this sort of hesitation about saying anything because they feel like, oh, we've talked about this already, or we've talked about a version of this, or we're all agreeing that the stories don't match. So maybe this doesn't matter, but this thing stuck out to me again, or stuck out for the first time. And I think it's great that people are still noticing that stuff. I mean, again, it just goes to show, like, I don't know, investigators revisit stuff over and over and over and over and over, trying to get a better picture of what happened, or trying to find that, you know, the truth, if the truth is to be found. So I think people are just kind of having the experience of being a good investigator. So I think it's great. One of the things that came up, Jonathan says, in Jay's first interview, after the tape is turned over, the detective asks him about Adnan wanting Jay to revisit the burial site. The detective asks Jay when this conversation with Adnan was, and he replies, prior to Haley's death. And the reason being, I need to cover it more. How could Adnan possibly know that he is going to bury her in too shallow a grave before he has actually killed her? It's just another, I don't think we've ever talked about that specific moment, but wow.
Yeah. So, and when I saw that question, it made me think about it. And my interpretation of that is, I mean, obviously that doesn't make sense in space and time, right? For him to have had that conversation before he killed her. So then I was like, well, why, you know, word choices matter. Where does prior to her death come from? And then what occurred to me is, what if the first time that Jay heard about this, that this became significant to him, was when her death was announced on the news? Mm-hmm. So that what that was obviously when they found her body. But for him, that was when he found out she was dead. So it's just, to me, it's just another, and there'll be people who say it's reading tea leaves, and maybe it is, but that's what I took out of that is if when it was announced on the news that her body was found, that's when he found out that she was dead.
Mm.
Then to him, when he says it was, he's trying to think of this sometime before that, before she was dead, before her death, because her death to him was when he found out she was dead, not when it actually happened.
That's interesting. That's kind of a partner to Jen saying that she saw on television that she thought it was that the body was missing, where you just have this like crossing over of space and time in a way that is very confusing to just listen to.
Yeah, and that's you're exactly right. That's the exact same situation where her connection to that was that they found her body, Hay's body. So then when she's telling the story later and she's making up a story, then it's you know, again, like her connection to it is the body. So it's prior to her body going missing.
Right.
Because it all became relevant to her once they found her body. Any of you who have been listening to me for any length of time know that working out is a big part of my life. It's part of my daily routine that I try to always make time for. But lately, life's been getting in the way of me spending as much time in the gym as I'd like, but I found a solution. Total Gym. It's an all-in-one gym that I can slide under my couch and pop up in minutes. When I miss my workout in the morning, now I can get it in while I'm watching TV in the evenings with a Total Gym. Do you want a total body workout in just 10 to 20 minutes? You need to try Total Gym. This thing does it all. And right now, you can try Total Gym for 30 days for just $1 plus free shipping. Seriously, $1. The Total Gym Fit, Total Gym's newest model, lets you do over 85 exercises in one home gym, so you'll never get bored working out again. And Total Gym accommodates all fitness levels from ages 8 to 80. So literally anyone listening to this can enjoy the Total Gym. I do it. My daughter Bella uses it. Even my 13-year-old son Parker uses it. And I'll be honest with you, when I first tried my Total Gym, I thought, this thing has got to be a gimmick. Then I did a 10-minute chest and tricep workout and was sore as hell the next day. I actually got a better workout in my living room than I usually do at the gym. How Total Gym works is by using a percent of your body weight as resistance. You set the resistance level higher to build muscle, lower to tone and slenderize. The unique design allows you to easily move from one exercise to another without having to add or remove weights. That means you can do strength training, cardio, and stretching all in one machine. Total Gym's the real deal. I freaking love it. I've been using it every day, even on the days that I do make it to the gym in the morning. I still hit 10 to 20 minutes on the Total Gym because, well, it's a better workout. Plus, with Total Gym, there's no assembly required. It sets up in minutes right out of the box and conveniently folds for storage under your bed or in your closet. Remember, it only takes 10 to 20 minutes a day to reshape your body. Head to totalgymdirect.com/truth for an additional 20% off your order. Plus, that includes a free ab crunch attachment and free shipping. This special offer won't be available for much longer. That's totalgymdirect.com/truth for an additional 20% off. And make sure to go to my URL, totalgymdirect.com/truth, so they know that I sent you.
I see a lot of folks in the chat pointing out, too, that shovels, Dolly and B. Hansen and Caroline, people are just saying that that continues to just stick out to them. The idea that Jen is very specific about the fact that she doesn't know if there was a shovel or shovels, while other things are, you know, like even vaguer, and the shovel or shovels thing is just makes people crazy. I guess
I have a theory about that too. As long as we're talking about just my analysis, my theories, my, you know, just one fella's opinion,
right,
about that is, to me, I've always thought about that as, again, we all but know. I mean, again, even if we listen to Jay's words, they had been talking to Jay prior to this interview, and so to me, I always figured, I bet that they already have sort of established in the workshopping the story with Jay that he's there with, and that there's multiple shovels. And if Jen said, you know, if Jay told her in the story, you have to tell that, you know, we went and got a shovel or we had to get rid of the shovel. I always imagine that as Jen saying, you know, well, then he went to go wipe fingerprints off the shovel and the cops going, shovel or shovels? I mean, was there probably more than one shovel? There's two, because she said, she just, and I only say that because she sounds so unsure of it. It's like, it sounds to me like her version of the story she thinks she's supposed to tell from Jay is that there's one shovel, but the cops are definitely trying to press on to her, suggest to her that there's more than one shovel. So you get that constant, the shovel or shovels. I don't know how many shovels there were. And like somebody in the chat says, she repeats that like 14 times. Yeah, she says over and over and over again, and that's just, again, that's just my analysis of it, but it's she thinks she's supposed to say shovel, but they're suggesting that she needs to say shovels, and so she just kind of puts that qualifier out there every time.
Yeah. Yeah, the other thing that stood out to me kind of in a fresh way with this round was the whole conversation about her seeing the clothes that he got rid of and realize, like, it just, again, total opinion, but it just sounds like she knows she's supposed to say that she was part of him getting rid of the clothes, even though he doesn't say that she was part of getting rid of the clothes.
Right.
But then any question about detail, just everything falls to pieces. And so there's this the vagueness of like, it's like a sliding doors thing where it's like, well, can I give you an answer that means that it could have been in a bag and also couldn't have been in a bag? Is it okay if we just have two stories that just go off in other directions from this focus point? Like, oh, I don't know. Could have been in a bag. Might have been in a bag. Did you see them? Well, I did see them. So I guess I guess it wasn't in a bag, but maybe it was in a bag. I probably would have looked in the bag. Like, just you're just like, oh no, you know.
Yeah. Just a little levity. Dolly in the chat says fake Timberlands gets them every time. Girl, he had some fake.
I had some serious ripoff Doc Martens for sure. That I was like hoping no one would realize we're not real. Sarah says, I'm not sure if this has been mentioned before in discussions of these interviews, but it just struck me today, Sarah, as you hear, a lot of us had those experiences. At the beginning of Jay's interview, he starts saying, on the evening of 1/12/99, I believe. Mm-hmm. Then the detective says, your birthday is January 12th, right? And Jay responds, yes, on the evening of my birthday. Couple things. One, the pause while waiting for Jay to tell them what he knows is a little lengthy, and it sounds like he could be reading or orienting himself on a page. I also think saying 1/12/99 is a little odd, just because I think most people would say January 12th, but this is all speculation. Two, what I found really interesting was the detective bringing up his birthday. Before Jen's interview started, the detective gave her date of birth and then the date and the time of the interview. Neither of these things happened before Jay's interview, so we could assume that they realized they forgot that part and threw it in there. But given his hesitation at the date, it seemed like they were trying to nudge him with a, yeah, it was your birthday, right? And of course, there's a comment that Steph's birthday was coming up when it was that exact day. Ultimately, this all means very little since these stories are already all over the place, but it just reiterates the point that Jay doesn't seem to have any anchors to these days, despite them being his birthday and his girlfriend's birthday and the day Adnan said he was going to kill Hay and the day that Hay goes missing. You'd think he would at least be able to make the days, even if his story is a little hazy because a few weeks have passed. It's a great point.
Yeah, and the 1/12/99 is right up there with at this time. To me, like it's very, to me, that seems very clearly that they're reading. And I agree. And we talked about this when we played the full interviews that, you know, those pauses seem like exactly what you said to me, that he's trying to orient himself, trying to find a place on a page. When you listen to the full interview, you can hear pages rustling while some of the stuff's happening. In some places, you can actually hear what sounds to me like a pen circling or pointing to something aside from that, as well as the taps, that Susan Simpson found. There's plenty going on there that make it, like you said, it all comes down. The whole thing is such nonsense. It almost seems trivial to focus on these little details. But that's the thing is, when you just say the story is ridiculous, then it makes it easy to be attacked. And we're trying to analyze data and be very data driven. So I think the details matter. If you can say like, no, like here's another specific example of why this is a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. I see Nick in the chat says, Jen's story ever mentioned Jay calling Nisha while sitting at her house before Jay left? If their timeline is, these are the absolute times that this has to have happened, but yet somehow Nisha and Adnan are the Nisha calls happening with Jay and Adnan, but it's also happening at the house.
Yeah, and just because great, the Nisha like, call is, huh. is, the Nisha call is at 3:32 and supposedly Jay didn't leave the house until 3:45 to 4:15, which, you know, they never really pin it down, but it sounds to me like she's remembering the day at that part. I think she is trying to remember a day when Jay was there and he left, that he left right before she left to go get her parents was how she came up with that time, I think.
Yeah.
But supposedly the call to Nisha was happening while he was there.
Yeah. Rosalind brings us up and, I'm glad you brought this up, Rosalind. Rosalind says, Jay mentions a few times, we argued, speaking about him and Adnan. They argued at the trunk pop, dumpster, burial site. But he just says, they argued. Was there ever any detail shared about the actual argument? Did detectives ask what they actually argued about? Seems a little odd. They wouldn't want details about what was said.
Now, I think, I mean, some of this, remember, this was just parts of the interview, and I think there's a little more to it, but I don't think he really articulates it, but it's the impression you get is, you know, he comes up, he wants me to bury the body, we argue. And I think like when they're getting the shovels, and I don't remember if it was the first or second interview at his house, you know, the story is not that they went to get the shovels, but that he went to the house, Jay goes inside, Adnan's still there, then Adnan start him and they argue, and then they, you know, he gets him to go with him to go, you know, bury the body. But it's always just like we were doing this thing and we argue, and kind of the impression you get is that they argued about that thing, but yeah, they never dig into it.
Yeah. And I think, again, for me at certain points, that just feels like you have to fill the time with something because there's no phone calls happening. I mean, that's kind of the impression that I get through some of that too, is like, okay, I guess nothing else is really going on at this point because we don't have a phone call to tie anything to. So I guess we're just arguing. Like, I don't know.
There is arguing. There is smoking weed, and there's vomiting. These things are time fillers.
Right, yeah. Right. But it's not good when you're arguing and a bunch of people start paying attention, so that part of the story has to go away. So that argument can't actually have happened in that way.
And we moved across town.
And we moved across town for that whole situation. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Rosalind also had that point about the clothes and whether they were in something or not. And you were not splitting hairs, Rosalind. That really, really struck me, as I said. Rosalind says, okay, one more burning question. Wasn't Adnan at the mosque the night of the 13th? For some reason I have in my head, he was leading a prayer service or something for Ramadan, and it was at 8, or he was rehearsing something for this at 8. Maybe I'm wrong, but if not, then how does this timeline work? According to Jay's story, it seemed like they were still in the streets around 9 or after that.
Yeah, Gutierrez never called any of those alibi witnesses at trial. I don't remember if it was that 8 or at 9. But I know Adnan was talking to the track coach about he was going to be leading prayer service. For some reason, in my mind, it was Friday was the day he was going to be leading the prayer service. And maybe that night at the mosque, he was going to be practicing for it or something like that. But I don't know that we have a real solid time there for that.
Right. Okay, got it. Let's see here. Yeah, you brought up the vomiting. Amanda says, I'm still bothered by the number of times Jay says Adnan threw up, yet there's never been any police report of this at the scene. Jay is insistent that Adnan threw up 3 times during the burial. If this whole story never happened, why would he keep adding this detail? And if Adnan's fasting, what would he even have to throw up? And then there was a little bit of a conversation. I know we're not supposed to do that on the follow-up post, but there was a little bit of a conversation around Ramadan and how much you can consume, you know, whether you can consume water or not, and, you know, whether or not you would have had anything in your stomach. I've heard, you know, I definitely remember from way back in the day, like the cereal days, how important it was to people who were sure that Adnan was guilty. The detail about him throwing up was like very important to a lot of people. And I think a lot of people use that as a truth anchor. Like, well, you wouldn't just say someone threw up unless they really threw up. Like,
who would make up that detail?
You would never make up that detail. Like, you wouldn't know that someone would throw up if they were horrified by something that had happened or if they were stressed out by something that would happen. So that is one of those things that people point to as like, clearly this is a true story. So it's interesting that detail is something that gets continuously kind of fought over.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. So first of all, who comes up with that detail? Somebody who's watched cop shows and stuff on TV. And watch movies, you know, that's typically something you see people, they see something gross, they throw up. It's really incongruous with Jay's whole story. Like Adnan is so flippant about the entire thing, you know, but also like so horrified that he's throwing up during it. So, I mean, that's, you do with that whatever you will, but as far as like the police not finding any evidence of it, they wouldn't. I mean, Hay was found 28 days after she went missing. So even if there was vomit on the ground between, you know, animals and weather and just bacterial decay, things like that, like I wouldn't expect them to find vomit. The fasting angle of it's interesting, but then, of course, the guilty side will just say, well, he wasn't really fasting. But it's interesting that Jay, I've always said this, it's interesting to me that Jay does point out that they went to dinner to break his fast. That, to me, is a truth anchor, right? Because that's not a normal thing.
Right.
And that's something that, you know, whether it was that day or another day, whatever, so Jay knows that Adnan fasts during Ramadan. That did not come from the police. That came from Jay. So it always really stood out to me that he said, you know, he went to break his fast. We went to McDonald's, whatever, to break his fast. You know, that's important because that means Adnan does fast, so much so that his pot smoking, drug dealing buddy that he hangs out with even knows that he fasts and that, you know, that there's a time when he breaks his fast. And then there was discussion under there, like some people, well, they could still hydrate yourself during the fast. I've done some research on this. I think it's everybody has their own way. I'm not Muslim, so I don't know exactly how this works. But through my faith, I've gone through times of fasting and stuff, and it was always kind of like some people are like, I'm fasting, but I'm still going to drink water. Some people don't fast at all. I think a traditional proper Muslim fast during Ramadan is no water, no nothing during the time that you're fasting. But who knows who, you know, some people are more lax about it. Maybe they drink water. I knew people that used to, if they were fasting for a day, they would still drink coffee. You know, I think it's all, don't know. But, and also you got to keep in mind that, remember, during this version of the story, Jay says that they were eating at McDonald's when he got the call from Adcock and had broken his fast. So I don't think that, as far as like trying to make an argument of the police didn't find any food or any indicators of vomit, or that Adnan wouldn't have vomited because he was fasting, I don't think either of those arguments work.
Yeah. Hope is in the chat saying she's a nurse and it doesn't matter if you've consumed anything, you're constantly making digestive juices. You will always have something to throw up, or you can have dry heaves and people might still say you're throwing up even if nothing's happening, right? By the way.
Yeah. So for all those reasons, that's just, and I want, because I want to be real and objective, like that is not an argument that you can stand on, I don't think, because there's too many unknowns there and there's too many holes in it.
Caroline, who is in the chat and mentioned in this follow-up comment that she would be. So hello, Caroline. So glad to have you here. And thanks again for all of your work. Caroline says, if there are any technical questions about piecing the interviews together, process questions about what or wasn't included, or questions about how Rachel and I pulled off our transatlantic collaboration, Caroline's happy to respond here in the chat. But she also has a question. She says, I'm not in law enforcement, and admittedly, most of the police interviews I've heard are the really bad ones that end up on podcasts because they've led to a false conviction. I guess I'm wondering, are these interviews normal? If not, what does a good interview sound like? And if these are par for the course, is there some strategy I'm not aware of that would preclude ever asking a follow-up question? It's just incomprehensible.
No, these are absolutely not normal. They're not good. They're not proper interviews. The lack of follow-up questions is a big one. Like you should be looking for those details. You should be doing things. I mean, I had to interrogate my 13-year-old the other day about something because he got in trouble. And I literally use these tactics that I've learned for interviewing him.
I'm so glad I'm not your child. Oh, yeah. I wouldn't get away with anything.
Yeah, he got in trouble. He got in a shoving match with somebody at school, and he gave his mom a bullshit story about it. And, you know, so I sat him down and asked him the questions, and I kind of got down to where I could see where the discomfort was. And so I kind of honed in there, and he finally gave me the version of the story that I thought was true. And then I did. And then one thing that investigators are trained to do is once I got him to tell me the story from beginning to end, then I had him tell me the story backwards. Okay, what happened before that? And what happened before that? And what happened before that? And I'm tracking to see if the two. And so I was able to get down to what was the actual truth, which it didn't. You know, when we talked to some of the other, the teacher who talked to the students that were there and witnessed it, the story I got was the true one eventually, and the one he told his mom was certainly not the true one at all.
Well, Emily said, did he ask for a lawyer? Just like you told him he always should.
No, so, but he should have. I got him good.
He should have.
But so those are things, if you're, remember, I think people lose track of, even Brett and Alice lost track of this, and, you know, when they were saying how we do this all the time when we're prepping witnesses, if you remember those episodes. And I kept saying, it's not the same thing. Prepping for trial, this is supposed to be a fact-finding interview. When you're doing that, a couple things. The follow-up questions, yes. Once you think you have the story on the record, you should be trying to get them to tell it backwards. But the other thing is you let them talk. Let them talk. You don't suggest anything. Soon, when you guys hear, when we get into season 15, once we launch that season, I'll probably play in an actual episode. I'll just, you know, I will just use pieces of it, but I'll probably put out for you, just to answer that question, Caroline, the full interview I conducted for that case over over this weekend, or it was actually late last week when I went and did it. And you'll hear, that's what a proper interview sounds like. I went in, I explained who I was and what I was doing. And then you're going to hear me saying, listen, you need to know I'm not on anybody's side. There's the only thing I want you to tell me is the truth. So, and I knew what I was looking for. I already knew the thing that I thought I needed to get out of this person. But what you're going to hear is me never even suggest it. I just said, so tell me what happened on that night of the murder. You tell me. And she's like, well, what do you want? I said, just tell me, like, walk me through it. Walk me through your night. And I refused to give any prompts until she finally started telling the story. And then when there was a silence where your instinct may be to jump in and like you would in normal conversation, to try to bump the story along further, like give them a little prompt to keep them moving. I don't. I sit there and say, I let that uncomfortable silence sit there until they start talking again. And then I let them go all the way through it. And you'll hear in that interview, me get 15 minutes into it, they get all the way to the end of the story. Then I go back and start asking some questions. You're going to hear me, and it's not obvious like I was with little Parker, where I'm like, now tell it to me backwards. But you're going to hear me asking questions in a way that I'm trying to see if they knew the story backwards. If I ask questions in the different sequence, am I going to get the same answers? Then I start the important pieces of it. I start asking follow-up questions. Okay, well then, so you said this happened. Explain to me why that happened. No suggestion. Nothing. I'm just you tell me why. I want the reasons why. Things that I can have some substance to. That's what a proper interview should sound like. And that is certainly not what we hear from this. So as far as the norm, I don't, you know, that depends on the investigators. But as far as a proper interview, no, these are not that. These are very, very, very far away from that. These are not at all fact-finding interviews. And that's part of when you're doing the statement analysis on these, when you listen to them, when I listen to them, that's what I'm hearing. They're not trying to draw information out of Jay. They're trying to get, in my opinion, they're trying to get Jay to parrot back to them what they want to hear. And when he gets off course, they try to steer him back to where they're going. And that shouldn't be happening in a proper interview. You should be letting him talk, let him get that information out, then ask follow-up questions about it.
Well, and I think it's actually sort of helpful that they did say that that's more what you would see from prepping a witness, because that actually helps. It could potentially help you interpret okay, so you're saying that this is the kind of thing that you would hear from someone who would talk to this person already before multiple times, and now you're just getting the final version that's going to be heard by everyone, and that's what it sounds like to prep someone. Like, oh, okay, that's helpful, because that's exactly what it sounds like. It sounds like, you know, we've had many conversations, and now we're just trying to pin down the things that we've decided are important and that we know we need to make this case. And that's why you're not going to hear us ask any questions at all about anything that we don't feel is useful. Because, you know, that's not where we are in the phase of this at all.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's exactly. So like when Alice said that in that episode, it's like, yes, exactly what you just said, Janet. Yes, you're right. That is what this sounds like. This would be normal if that's what you're doing, but that's not supposed to be what they're doing. It's like when you listen to it, any of you that are still kind of on the fence about it, go back and listen to the full interviews, Jay and Jen's interviews, and ask yourselves, are these detectives curious about anything? And just listen for that. Don't listen to what Jay's saying. Listen to the detectives. Do they sound curious? Do they sound like they don't know what happened and they just want to find out what happened? And it's kind of enlightening if you just, you know, block out Jay and just listen to them and their tone and the way they're asking questions and the things they're saying. And it's very eye-opening.
Yeah. I mean, I think you see, from my memory, I feel like you see more kind of curiosity about Jen. But again, to me, in my opinion, it sounds like the curiosity comes from, oh, we didn't expect to hear that. And is it going to square with something we think we already know? You know,
yeah.
It's like, it's more kind of, and then, you know, the questions about who you told, you would think that part would be I mean, I would think that being told, like, yes, I absolutely told someone this, to me, that would be like a huge, like, full stop moment of like, okay, you told this person what, on what day? What is their full name? Do you know their date of birth? Do you have their contact information? Like, right. I am hearing for the very first time that there are multiple sources who will be able to confirm your story. That's a big deal. And I just don't get that really at all from that, you know, no. Curiosity. It's pretty minor curiosity.
Yeah. And the last thing I'll say on this one, we'll move on to the next question, but along those lines about hearing kind of the way the questions are asking, do they sound curious? What you hear from Ritza McGillivray that you shouldn't hear, that like you won't hear in an interview from me, like, right, if I'm interviewing somebody where I'm actually trying to find facts, you won't hear things like, when you were dropping him off, did you have a conversation about something? Or was he going to some event? Did he talk to someone? Those are very, very, very clear indicators that they already know the answer they're looking for, and they're trying to jog his memory back to, or in this case, I believe, point, you know, they're probably pointing to the paper. Did he have some event? Oh, yeah, sorry. Track practice. You know, those are not questions you should be hearing in a fact-finding interview. Those suggestions, those are the things you should be looking for.
Yeah, Solomon even said in the Facebook post, even the so-called first interview is scripted for Jay. He can't help but read the topics / key points. When describing his arrival to Jen's house, he says, waiting game. Not that it was just a waiting game where I had to play the waiting game, but just simply waiting game. He's reading from something. I feel for Jen because her story is just her telling Jay's story. So, like the game of telephone, there's a lot of misinformation and she has to inject herself in to try to make it make sense. There's only one real statement, and that's Jay's.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And imagine how hard that is, right? So the way that this went down, according to them, right? Now, whether this stuff actually happened back at the time or not, is the police go to Jay or to Jen. She's like, I don't know anything. She goes to Jay. He's like, what the fuck? And then Jay's like, I need you to tell them this, this, this. So like real quick, here's the story. This is everything. You just tell them that all this happened. You hear it one time, one night, and then go in and think you're just going to be able, I'm just going to tell them, well, Jay just told me that Adnan killed. It's probably that simple. Couple little key elements. And then they start asking questions. And like you were saying earlier, Jen, she's like, uh-oh, I don't know the answer to these questions. So yeah, I saw the clothes. I mean, I didn't. The clothes were in a bag, but I think I saw the clothes. I didn't see the clothes. Because, and what she's, to me, what she's really saying is, Jay didn't tell me if they were in a bag or not. Right. I don't know.
Right.
He just told me that we took his clothes. That's right. All.
Well, and we've heard that before, not even with just this case, but we've definitely heard before that thing where people say, I probably would have said, like, yeah, putting qualifiers. Everything into such a hypothetical. It's like, no, I understand time has passed, but I'm asking you about a thing that supposedly actually happened. And you're telling me what you're replacing your memory with what you imagine would have made sense if that thing had actually happened. It's
right.
A lot of kind of hoops to jump through when you're supposed to just be recounting a memory, you know?
Yeah. Do you find yourself, I find myself when I go back through this and I'm even like looking at the chaps and the chat, like, forget the fact that there was a terrible ice storm. Little thing, like things were like the cops just, like Ritza McGillivray didn't do their homework. Like you dropped him off in the front of the school when track was outside at the track practice. And we were driving around. I remember it was raining when there was fucking cars sliding sideways down roads that day. Like, so when I go through all this, then I step back and think like, it's so frustrating that this worked. It's so frustrating that Adnan got convicted based on where if, you know, when you pay a little bit of attention to the details. Like what a gigantic miss by Gutierrez and the defense team that they missed all of this stuff. And sadly, that is par for the course. I'm not saying always, you know, but you see this a lot that when attorneys are working on, you know, they're saddled with trying to work on a dozen cases at a time and they don't have the time to commit to these details. And they've got, you know, a confession on the record from somebody that, you know, they're just not putting the time in. But it's really sad to me that when you spend a little bit of time and just start trying to cross-reference any of this, it's like, this is nonsense.
Well, it's almost
none
like,
of it.
Yeah, it's almost like the defense accepted you know, we know that she stipulated to the lividity. It's almost like you're stipulating, and I understand that there are, you know, parts of the transcript where this is absolutely shown to be false, and that there are things that Gutierrez actually does try to do to, you know, catch him out, catch Jay out on a lie and stuff. But you almost feel as if the defense kind of bought into the same line that the prosecution gave, which is like, well, there's a basic story. Like, you almost feel like they are afraid there's a basic story, so they don't want to dissect it too much because eventually it'll just show that there is a basic story when there isn't.
Yeah, well, and the other thing, in I probably shouldn't be so hard on her, because in her defense, don't forget that going into the first trial, they hadn't seen the statement. Like, she literally, all she knew is that a co-conspirator confessed. So you have to imagine, like, in the back of her mind, at least, like, well, he's saying he's innocent, but supposedly the person that helped him do this has confessed. Like, this can't be. So at least into the first trial, they couldn't track any of this stuff down because they literally didn't know what the story was. But then they did, you know, before the second trial. And that's when a lot of this legwork, I think, should have been done.
Right. And by then it was even worse for Christina. That is what I have for today. Although I do have a recommendation that I was going to mention at the top of the show. But if people are interested in checking something out, a listener one of the last couple of weeks had mentioned in the chat that they really enjoyed a podcast called Murder 101. And so I just happened to notice that in the chat. I said, maybe I should check that out. Cause I mean, I want to thank that listener. I don't remember who it was, but someone was like, this is a high school teacher who ended up getting a class to try to solve some unsolved murders in Tennessee. And so I went through that whole season, and I thought it was so enjoyable and so interesting. So thank you, listener, for suggesting that, the couple of you that did. And again, if you're looking for something in the little gap of time where, you know, Bob's going to be traveling and stuff, I definitely would recommend that.
Yeah, for sure. And actually, that was one of the people that I was trying to try, because I would love to have that teacher on.
Oh, sure.
For an episode.
Yeah.
I was having trouble, like, going through, like, Twitter and stuff, trying to find good contact information, and then I kind of fell off the radar. But that's one, because I just think, I haven't heard the podcast, but I've heard a lot about the podcast, and it's a really cool story. And hey, if you guys want to prep for Sunday's episode too, the mysterious case of Fred the Head, Ken Davies' podcast is one you want to check. There's 48 episodes out, so you're not going to listen to the whole thing between now and Sunday.
You never know. Listen, yeah, our listeners, you never know. I wouldn't put it past them.
I'm trying to think of, like, is there enough time in the day when they hear this on Friday? Is there enough, if they listen,
you can listen to it
through
at two times the speed.
Yeah, there you go. So that's coming Sunday. So thanks everybody for joining us in the chat, for all of your questions. We appreciate you guys. Again, there will be no follow-up or main episode next week because I'm going to be traveling. We're going to take a little breather, grab some fun in the sun with my kiddos. And then we'll be back and right at it. And I really hope that when I get back, I'm going to have some records so we can go through with this. Like, I have the trial transcripts. I have the pretrial motions, and I've got some stuff, and I've got some of the police file, but, like, I don't have, you know, there's reference to these interviews and interview recordings and transcripts and stuff, and that are just absent from the file. Those are the things that I need to get. So still working on that. Thanks, everybody. And again, I think maybe someone already emailed me based on what I saw in the YouTube chat. But if not, if you're a Michigan lawyer and you want to help hold a police department accountable for the records retention laws and fulfilling FOIA requests properly, I would love to chat with you. And with that being said, thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, everyone. Bye, guys.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production. All music for the show is created and composed by Shane Yoder at putthemina.com. The font you see on all of our logos and banners were created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Katie Ross of createdintandem.com manages and maintains our website, Truth and Justice Pod, where you can view all photos and documents discussed in every episode. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Pamela Westby, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Erica Cantor, Melissa Cardenas, Kay Woodyomnik, and Danielle Rohr. And as always, thank you to all of you for your engagement and your support. If you like the show and you want to support us, you can do that in a number of ways. The number one way for you to support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. If you join our Patreon, not only will you be financially supporting our work, but you'll also get something for your pledge. For just $5 per month, you'll get all episodes ad-free and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups that include an hour-long pre-show chat exclusive to our patrons. Other levels will get you a Truth and Justice Army t-shirt, Truth and Justice hats, and even the opportunity to co-host a Friday follow-up episode. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny, and it goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a case that you'd like us to consider covering, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. And the most important thing that you can do is engage in our investigations. You can keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page, follow us on Instagram, or join in on the conversation on the Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. For all of you tweeters out there, you can connect with us on Twitter @TruthJusticePod. To follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found @BobRuffTruth, Janet can be found @JanetVarney, and Zach is @Z2TheQ. However you do it, stay engaged, stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.